You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
We had this makeup artist who was just really amazing, but she had this accent like Fran Drescher. She was one of those real whiny Americans, but she was so sweet. And she kept on going on about her husband, and I went to her house, and it was her husband's ex-husband's house, ex-husband's dog, and she kept on going on about him. And you know, we filmed with her for so many days, and I remember seeing Johnny Depp's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and I kind of rolled in it and kissed it. And when I got back home after that, I was watching E! True Hollywood Stories and saw who his ex-wife was, which is my makeup artist in Los Angeles. I was like, oh my word, she must think I'm such a creep.
Hooray!
My guest on the Dan Nichols Show this week is somebody I first fell in love with about 20-odd years ago when I saw her park her monster truck outside a garage and go sashaying in to the Orange Street. It wasn't even a Woolworths there. I think it was like a Checkers many, many years ago. Today she joins me on the show. I had to catch myself. I was about to say Jeannie D, but now it's Jeannie B.
Jeannie B.
You married woman.
Can you believe it? It's taken me long enough. And if somebody had told me marriage was going to be so nice, I would have done this hundreds of times before.
I'm so happy. You are looking, I mean, generally you glow and you look bubbly and wonderful, but you are looking so happy at the moment.
Thank you. The glow is because I've just had a facial. I don't know if we'll give that credit to my husband.
but we will give him plenty of other credit. Nobody seems to know who he is. This was all so funny in the build up to your wedding, because there was this mystery man who nobody knew who he was, and I heard all these stories. Now he's a South American billionaire. he imports drugs from Europe. He's Yanez. That was the one I thought. But now we discover he's actually this annoyingly good-looking and chiselled and successful gentleman who was also a professional rugby player. Basically, if you'd gone on to a computer program and said, right, what boxes do I want to tick? I think you've got most of them.
Yeah, he's perfect.
Aww.
He's so lovely. Yeah, he's really wonderful.
Aww. I love seeing you so happy.
Thank you. It's a really cool
space. And it also makes me realise why you've been doing all this travelling, because for a while I thought maybe you'd kind of joined Emirates as a first-class air hostess. Because you just seem to be everywhere in the world. And then it's going to, you've just been on this kind of honeymoon that's lasting forever.
Yeah, exactly. But you can tell that my husband's a rugby fan, because last year I think I went to every single rugby match ever. But I'm also a rugby fan, so I suppose it's fair. But yeah, I do a fair amount of travelling, which I've always really done. So not much has changed. Only now I'm travelling for fun and not for work.
and that work, I think when we first properly met, I do remember you having that. Do you remember that monster truck you had?
It was a Ford Bronco. It was actually the Eddie Bauer edition. It was the same one as O.J. Simpson got bust in, except mine was two-tone. I had a navy blue one with a tan top. Yeah, that was honestly more than 20 years ago even.
And it was terrifying, because this monster vehicle would arrive and you'd think nobody was driving it, because nobody could see you above the wheel.
And then the door would open.
You'd swing out. I think you had a cowboy hat on the day I saw you.
I don't let big things intimidate me, Dan. So I drove it like it was stolen. it was a struggle. I had to hoist the seat up as high as I could just to look over the bonnet, because it was a big car. It was a monster truck.
Those were the early days. You were Good Hope FM then, weren't you?
Yes, that was exactly the
start of this roller coaster journey.
Yeah. I was 18 years old when I ran away from home and joined that circus. And it was just such a fantastic experience for me. I loved it from the minute. I always knew that I wanted to be in radio, TV. And thankfully, Good Hope FM gave me that kickstart in life. But it meant me moving from Joburg to Cape Town.
And that's a big thing, because you were Portuguese, and generally the way the Portuguese work, and I know this because my head of production is Portuguese, he's just turned 40, so naturally he still lives at home with his mum.
And only because he's not married yet. You only leave the house when you get married.
Exactly. I was going to say the same with the daughters. Once you've found yourself a good husband, off you go. In all seriousness, how difficult was it to say goodbye to home and leave a family which, like most Mediterranean families, is very nuclear?
Such a close family, so it was really hard. And I've got a very big family as well. I've got 3 brothers, 18 cousins. I mean, an enormous family. And one of those families where all of your siblings and relatives are your best friends. So it was very difficult to leave home. And I was very young and very naive. and then coming to Cape Town, and then starting on Good Hope FM 2 to 6 in the morning.
Oh, that's the prime slot.
Wow. Coming to Sea Point Main Road at 2 o'clock in the morning. And now it's very fabulous. But back then, it wasn't so cool. Like, it was Dodge. And so it was quite scary. But yeah, I made the most out of it. I DJed a lot in some incredible clubs. And I loved it. I really, really loved it. I loved radio. I miss it, actually.
It is such a cool medium.
That's how this podcast is making me feel all warm and fuzzy inside.
Plenty of nostalgia. Nostalgia for me, too, because I think our paths used to cross quite often. We'd end up at the same functions. Normally, I'd sort of wave, hopefully, at the velvet rope you were standing behind with a bottle of tequila in your hand, launching into another night. But it was a really cool time to be in Cape Town. There was a lot of energy and excitement, a little different to where it is today. I loved that stretch of life in Cape Town.
Oh, big time. And starting a career in media when there was no social media was also really
was
exciting.
Very helpful.
Nobody knew about those bottles of tequila that you saw. Yeah, it was. It was quite protected and wholesome, actually. It was a great, what a time to be alive.
And it kind of gave you the platform, finding your feet in media, to what I think most South Africans still know you best for and love you for, and that was the time on Top Billing.
Yeah.
And it became a show that was so iconic, and you had this really cool, it's kind of like the Avengers of television in South Africa, because it was all the cool and beautiful people hanging out in wonderful places. It was just the dream job.
I mean, what a show. What a good idea. It was one of those shows where people thought, oh, why didn't I think of that? Just because it had a bit of everything. And again, the presenters were fantastic, but the content was so amazing. And so that was another fantastic experience, because from food, fashion, architecture, traveling the whole world, meeting some of the finest people in the world. So ridiculously good opportunity and such a fun job. Also, no social media. So when the cameras aren't rolling, the real fun starts. And yeah, that was great. And I did that for so many years of my life. I grew up on that TV show. And so it's sad that it's not around anymore, actually. I heard that SABC want to bring it back, but I can't imagine it being the same. I don't think it'll have the same flavor.
Well, unless you and I host it and we kind of just spend the entire time traveling the world to wine estates and restaurants and luxury hotels.
Yeah, which would be great. But if they're putting it on SABC, how many people are going to watch it? Like 5.
Well, I think if we're on it, we might change that around. Tell me about those early days of Top Billing. Who was the first person who you got to interview who you went, oh my God, I can't believe I'm in the same room as...
Oh, I can't even remember, actually, because I kind of, like, I was thrown in the deep end. Also, with Good Hope FM and at Rao Radio, funny enough, I started interviewing celebrities. Like, for Rao Radio, I got to interview Lenny Kravitz. So, I was 16 or something like that. So, I had baptism by fire. With Top Billing, I think I'd started working for them the same day or the same week I started working for them. The producer said, I see you've got a European passport. Can you go to America? So, yes, of course, tonight. Yeah, sure, for a month. Yeah, sure. And kind of had to go in and produce and come out with my own inserts. So she said, I need 12 stories out of this. Good luck. And in those days, there wasn't any Google. So it was basically myself and a director, Brad, sitting in a hotel room with the yellow pages of Los Angeles, kind of trying to find Janet
Jackson's
manager.
How do you spell Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, exactly. That's how it started. And so it was crazy just trying to get connected and trying to find people to interview and that would agree to us. Like, we couldn't exactly reference Top Billing by Googling it. So we had to explain who we are and sell ourselves. Also, we stayed at a hotel close to LAX, which is quite far away from where everything cool is happening. And taxis were so expensive then that it was cheaper for us to hire a limousine to drive us around the entire time that we were there than to take a taxi. So it was just crazy.
That is such a genie thing to do.
I know, right?
Just imagine you standing up through the sunroof with a bottle of champagne in hand, cruising into Hollywood.
Well, you know what? Another very, very typical genie thing to do, which was so dorf. We had this makeup artist who was just really amazing. But she had this accent like Fran Drescher. She was one of those real whiny Americans, but she was so sweet. And she kept on going on about her husband. And I went to her house and it was her husband's, ex-husband's house, ex-husband's dog. And she kept on going on about him. And you know, we filmed with her for so many days, and I remember seeing Johnny Depp's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and I kind of rolled in it and kissed it. And when I got back home after that, I was watching E! True Hollywood Stories and saw who his ex-wife was, which is my makeup artist in Los Angeles. I was like, oh my word, she must think I'm such a creep. So that was quite funny. But yeah, so many little experiences happened over those years that if I had to write a book, it would be a real page turner. But I probably couldn't write the book because I wouldn't be able to honestly say half the stuff that went on.
Lawsuits everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
And you also got to explore, and you got to explore some incredible places. And I often think there's a disconnect between what we see and what you actually experience, because the authenticity doesn't always translate.
Yeah.
Some of the places you went to were uber glamorous and 12 stars and amazing. But I'm sure there were other places you went to where you just felt, oh my goodness, I'd never thought this would be so amazing.
I always used to say to Yanez and say to our executive producers that I wish the stuff that ended up on the cutting room floor was actually the show. Because, you know, those days with TV broadcast rights, you had to be so careful with what you broadcast. And you had to come across as being so parat and this and that. And there were so many guidelines that the best stuff actually always ended up out of the edit, unfortunately. It would have been a much bigger show.
It probably would have had to be shown a little later in the evening, though.
No, not so much. Like, there was this moment, I don't know if I've told you the story before, I'm sure, but when Yanez and I were in Vietnam and we were paddling across the Mekong River Delta, and it just started torrentially raining. And so we had to push our little boats up onto, you know, the sandbank somewhere and stop for lunch. And that we obviously couldn't speak Vietnamese, and the people there couldn't speak English. So I was pointing at things on the menu for them to serve us. And they saw that Charlie, our cameraman, had this big camera. And so they wanted to just dazzle us. So they brought out snakes and all these fish. And Charles, our cameraman, had a radical fear of snakes. And so he started filming because he said if he views it behind the viewfinder, his fear won't kick in and he'll be okay. But then they just start hamming it up and they bring out like pythons and start wrapping them around me. And then what they did was they brought this Haitian sack, opened it, and out came these cobras. And the one came right up to my face and the guy took it, slit it all the way down, put the heart in a shot glass and filled it with its blood and handed it to me to drink.
And did you?
Did the same for Yanez. I can't say no. So we did it in solidarity and
shot glass of cobra blood and a cobra heart.
Yeah, but it was still beating. And I mean, obviously that night we had a bottle of tequila just to help it pass.
Dull because the pain.
But I had nightmares that night thinking, I mean, I was raised Catholic. You can't exactly swallow the serpent. So, yeah, amazing things. But that would never have made it onto TV. I mean,
which is a pity because I think it would have today, though, because we've, in terms of how we do things.
And, yeah. Or anyway. Peter would have sued me, but yeah. I mean, one of the two.
That was one of the many adventures you had with Yanez. And I remember there was always the, you know, when are they going to fall in love? When are they going to get married? Because you went so well together. But in fact, it was just the most wonderful, and still is, the most wonderful friendship.
It's just the most beautiful friendship. But his wife is so much more beautiful than he is.
Considerably.
And I started off being besties with Yanez, but ended up being double besties with his wife Juliana, and I've got a great relationship with these kids. We still see each other almost all the time. It's a great friendship. What a friendship. It's one that lasts a lifetime, and yeah, very beautiful. I'm so glad we had all of those amazing years together traveling. Yeah, it was great.
They are special memories, and they're memories that you've created in this story that you've had today, and that people have seen through the prism of television.
Yes.
And there's this perception, you know, Jeannie's this glamorous TV type, and that's kind of who she is, and there certainly is that aspect. But the reason why I've always loved you and loved your good friend Joanne Strauss is for all the glamour and the dazzle and the beauty, is you're two of the funniest people I know, and whenever we spend time together, it's just genuinely so enjoyable. And I think that's a side that people don't always see of you, that you could have done stand-up quite comfortably, because you're just a genuine really funny person.
Thank you. I love a good laugh. My husband always tells me that I'm very funny for a girl.
Welcome to 1950s.
That's what I tell him. I tell him he's very smart for a man.
Well, he's clearly made some good decisions. We mentioned, Joanne, that you're responsible indirectly for the population explosion we have in South Africa. Given that Joanne and her mystery husband, nobody knows who he is, if he really does exist, this mythical German doctor, I've lost count of the number of children they have. I think they've lost count of the number of children they've had. Yeah. But the reason there are all of these little Cape German Strausslings trotting about the Cape is that you actually introduced them on a wild night. And if I'm not, I think Joanne alluded to it. She said you could tell the story. But
did she say I could tell the story?
She did say you could tell the story. Because I think she'd just broken up with somebody. She was in one of those, right, I hate the world, let's go and drown sorrows.
I'm the best person to phone in those kind of environments. So, I'm only telling the story because she gave you permission, because I know Joanne is hugely private. Like, her children always have. If you didn't know her, you'd think that her children had emoji faces.
They don't.
No, they're actually the most beautiful, beautiful, beautiful children you can ever imagine. I mean, as you can imagine, she's so magnificent. So Joanne phoned me one morning in tears, and she had literally just broken up with a boyfriend that morning. And so I said, I'm coming to fetch you. This is great. Let me heal you. And I took her to a Caprice. I got a bottle of vodka. I got a bottle of tequila. And I got a bottle of cranberry juice.
And what did Joanne have?
The cranberry juice. And so I was sitting on the sidewalk making us little makeshift cosmopolitans. And this man walked past us, this 6'4" bronzed goddess. She's the goddess. And he walked past us and I looked and I went, oh, Joanne, there, that's your husband. And I got up.
Did you actually say that?
Those were my first words. I said, Joanne, that's your husband. And I got up and I went to go and speak to him. And I invited him to the table. And he obviously just looked at the two of us and was like,
I know which one I want.
Das ist gut. And he sat down and I said, so what are you doing tonight? Would you like to come with us to the theater? I had tickets to a show. And he said yes. And him and Joanne have been together ever since. So, yeah, it was a cute story. But they just hit it off so well. But he looks like somebody who she should be with. And my subconscious mind just knew that.
Yeah, like I have actually met him. He does exist. And if you had, if ER had been filmed in Germany, then he was your, was it McDreamy, McSweeney,
Listen, George Clooney, like, has got nothing on this oak.
And it's a great friendship that you and Joe have had. You talk about the friendship with Yanez, and it's another thing that I do love about you that I think comes from the Portuguese family. But the people you are close to, you are stapled to. It's a really big part of who you are.
I collect people, and I'm also fiercely loyal. So the people who I do have in my life, I've had my whole life, and my friendships have been the longest friendships. All of my friends and my really close circle I've had for over 15 years, 20 years. I mean, if I was older than that, I suppose the friendships would go on for longer.
But you won, and I say this in the most delicate way possible, because being being Jeannie, being Portuguese, you're still annoyingly young to look at. But you've got through a big chunk of career.
Yeah.
You're now very happily married and having really cool adventures. But what does the next stretch hold? That you've done so much. What still remains ambition-wise?
Well, it's hard because I'm fiercely ambitious, and I have been, but my career started really young. I mean, I was doing commercials and little theatre projects from when I was 12 years old. So I've worked a lot and I've done a lot, but I still feel like I'm not finished. So I have launched a little subscriber-based newsletter.
I did see that.
Called Genius. And it's just what I wanted to become is almost if Top Billing and Goop had a baby, it would be Genius. So I
What
just
would the
thought,
candles smell like?
peonies. You thought I was going to say something else. That's funny. No, peonies. You see, my brain, my mouth works faster than my brain sometimes, so I've actually got to learn to hold myself. But yeah, so if Topoling and Goop had a baby, it would be genius. And I just thought, I'm traveling so much, I'm meeting so many nice people, I'm doing such cool things, why not just share them with my fan base that has been with me for so many years?
Now, I saw this.
Come along for the ride.
I messaged you instantly when I saw this, and I said, I'm only subscribing if there are recipes, because one of my favorite parts of your Instagram is you will post a photo of a tuna sandwich and follow me for more recipes. And I don't just love that because I know you and I know that we have that similar sense of humor. Yeah. But I know there are going to be dozens of people out there who don't know you who look at it, but that's a tuna sandwich. That's not a great recipe. And taking it seriously.
You see, now in my mind, sometimes I do come up with brilliant recipes. Like, have you ever taken all bran flakes, grated cheese on it, put it in the microwave and like almost mush it together to become like a molten rock? Trust me, eat that and call me. I mean, the cheese to bran ratio has to be done correctly. Yeah. Otherwise,
sort of
it's not going to be that delicious.
Here? Bit of mozzarella, some Gruyere combination.
No, go cheap and cheerful cheddar.
It's sort of almost luminous.
It's a good choice in cheese.
Chernobyl cow produced.
No, the fancy stuff you've got to use for, you know, if you're having it raw. But if you're going to melt it, you want to melt a good cheddar.
Something that could be made into a children's plastic toy.
Exactly. But my favorite recipe is just wrapping a gherkin with some cheese and some ham. And that is the perfect,
just smashing
the perfect snack. Yeah, my snack-cidence. I'm not a great cook. Like, I'm not going to lie. The other day, I was I had people come over for a dinner party. And normally, I outsource. I get like a caterer or somebody to do it for me. And but the other day, I thought, you know what? It's just going to be four of us. Let me just make something, and let me make this Mediterranean okra dish. So I spent the whole afternoon prepping and cooking in the kitchen. And my husband says, "So what are we going to serve our guests for dinner tonight?" So I said, "No, I'm cooking." And he goes, "No, but seriously, what are we going to serve?" So we ordered sushi. and then we did serve a little bit of the okra, but it wasn't great. You know, when you see people like kind of pushing their forks around their plates
cause and use words like it's quite interesting.
Yeah, it's. And, I mean, it's got flavor.
Yeah, it's a bit different. Very different.
That's exactly what the feedback I received. And then somebody sneakily said to my stepdaughter, like, "Is Jeannie a good cook?" And she so beautifully and innocently said, "Oh, yeah, she is. She's the best cook. She makes the best chips." Just because I'm so good at putting those frozen ones in the air fryer. But it doesn't matter. Like, nowadays, a woman's place is not in the kitchen. A woman's place is in the jacuzzi.
With a cosmopolitan in hand. Yeah. How does that go down, though, with the slightly older generations? Because in the Mediterranean world, I'm married into a Greek family. The Greeks and the Portuguese have much in common.
Yeah.
I look at my mother-in-law, for instance. Her very basic premise is if 11 people are coming to dinner, she will cook in case each one of them brings 17 people they haven't told her about.
Yes.
And it's her raison d'être. She just spends her life making amazing food. And now this Portuguese tradition has come to a grinding halt in the hands of the former Mr. Javier.
Yeah, I'm the dud. But it doesn't matter because I still over cater. I just know who to do the catering for me. For anyone in Cape Town, Sababa is this Mediterranean store. She's also got two cookbooks out. And I make a great salad, by the way. I do entertain very well, but just not the cooking part. But I get Sababa to, you know, in the morning you go and take all of your dishes, and then in the afternoon you go and collect them all, and then it looks like you've
made
actually
the food yourself.
Made it yourself.
Well, luckily you haven't revealed that secret to anybody, or they might now know.
No one will ever know.
But you do love food, and again, it's one of the many annoying elements of you is the fact that you look like you just walked off a catwalk. But I know you have 35 gourmet meals a week, as anybody else who follows you did. And when I see you revel in these new restaurants, you found an Ottolenghi cafe in London or a little spot in Paris during the 9 months you were in France last year for the World Cup. And that utter joy of reveling in food. And to me, that's so good because there's often a perception that, okay, well, people who look like Jeannie must eat lentils once a week and live on sparkling water and dreams. And that's kind of what their menu should be.
No,
and
you're very much not that. Sparkling wine and dreams. No, you've got to, you look so good when you eat so good. It's about balance. And I'm happy and I love great food. I love good wine. I love good books. I love good people, good conversation. I love good music. I just surround myself with things that I love. And trust me, I've got to do a hell of a lot of Pilates and a hell of a lot of yoga and walk a lot. But it's all about balance. I think happy people are the prettiest people.
Also just lots of vomiting and heroin, that's your other option. So
I mean,
it does have its downsides
that's
occasionally.
Never really appealed to me. The vomit
you've
part,
never liked vomiting.
No. Thank God. I mean I'm not a 17-year-old at a house party.
All right, we're of course not endorsing any of the sort. What we will endorse though is some of the places you've been to. I was at Core in London a few weeks ago. Oof. It was beyond sensational. Claire's.
London's got some good restaurants now. And I was in New York in January, and New York has gone down.
Really?
Oh, I couldn't find anything great to do. And it was all very.
Well, that's their death warrant sign.
No, I know. But now London for me is just on another level.
And it's eclectic because there is just so much, not just in scale of restaurants, but all right, I can go and eat in a Kazakhstani restaurant or a Peruvian ceviche bar. Or
yes.
There is something.
Did you go
to
Amazonica?
I've actually eaten next door to it a couple of times at Sexy Fish.
Yes,
Amazonica's on my next. The thing I do struggle with, though, is that I walk into the restaurant and then occasionally I have the misfortune of having to pay. And then my bank manager phones me and asks me why I don't want my children to go to university. And then my wife phones me to tell me that the house has just been repossessed. And someone's driving off with my car and the dog. And we'll come to dogs in a second. But it is, when you go overseas, it is one of the challenges. Being from this part of the world.
It's so sad. It's really sad. I remember when the year, well, I don't remember, but my dad always tells me the year I was born, the rand was stronger than the dollar. But that's part of what we're offering on Genius as well. I'm doing lists. So like when you go to London, I'm going to have lists of where's the best place to eat, where's the best place to go for cocktails, where's the best place to stay, where's the best place to shop. And I'll give all of my secret sauce in those.
Well, here's a request then, before we go on to the subject, which is the only reason you agreed to join me on the podcast, which is dogs. Can I give you a monthly, it's monthly, the newsletter?
Yeah.
Can I give you a wine contribution for your newsletter?
Yes, please. Huh. You can be my contributor.
There you go.
There you go. You're hired.
Brilliant. Done.
I'll pay you in smiles or wine.
Well, we'll get your people and my people can talk about that and I'll negotiate it.
Yeah. All right,
that's
brilliant. That's so exciting.
I've got a job. Fantastic. let's talk about dogs because you and my wife have much in common. You're not the tallest people. You're both Mediterranean.
Yes.
You're both impossible to win an argument with. You can both demolish a bottle of red wine by looking at it. And you have medical obsessions with dogs. And I did some research because I've got guys who do all this stuff for me. And 17% of the internet traffic in South Africa in 2023 was you and my wife looking at videos of dogs on the internet.
I'm obsessed.
And I'll be reading, happily reading through a book, and suddenly I'll get yelled at, Angel! And I turn around because I think she's caught fire or somebody's broken into the house. And no, she's found a pug balancing on top of a bull mastiff while wearing a coat. And it's just, I don't dislike dogs, but you and Dee are just another level.
Yeah, obsessed. My husband says I need a farm because I want another one. I've got three and I want a fourth.
It's kind of like Joanne with children, really.
Yeah, I know. So I've got three dogs and they are the cutest. I've got the best dogs in the world, honestly. They are so, so amazing. French bulldogs, firstly. I've got two French bulldogs and they've got a sense of humor. They are so funny. Last night, the little one was playing hide and seek with me. But like, and I know people who aren't dog people think I'm crazy because how would you know if the dog's hiding and seeking for, but they spy you out. Like she'll hide behind a wall and then try and give me a fright when it's so cute. They are the funniest dogs. And the other one that I've got is a miniature toy Pomeranian. that we originally got to be a boy dog, and he now identifies with... Yes, well, it's them, they. So Chichi is them, they. He doesn't identify with being a boy or a girl. He's just, he's fluid, gender fluid.
As we try and dispel Cape Town celebrity stereotypes here. they do sound like the kind of dogs that Paris Hilton would keep in her handbag.
Yeah, the one's Paris. The one's called Paris because she's a French bulldog that was born when we got to France last year for the World Cup. And then by the time the World Cup finished, she was ready to come and live with us. And so we were thinking of what we were going to call her. And we said, if South Africa wins the Rugby World Cup, we'll call her Paris. If they don't win the Rugby World Cup, I don't know, we'll call her Freckles, Pickles.
Auckland.
So she's Paris, our World Cup pup.
So we've also got a Paris. Our Paris is named slightly differently. Our Paris is Greek history. Helen, no, not the island, but Paris, who was Helen of Troy's kidnapper / love interest.
Amazing.
But everybody thinks because it's Paris, it's a girl, and Paris is a little boy.
Yeah.
Who is...
Is that the big bull bull?
No, well, he was a bull mastiff. He was Stavros.
Okay.
Stavros the Terrible. He sadly left us a couple of years ago.
Oh, he was magnificent.
Which has to be, as we delve into a topic I try and avoid because I normally burst into tears. I'd never had dogs before. We'd had one dog briefly growing up, hadn't lasted very long, gone to live on a farm. We'd always had cats. My mum's obsessed with cats, so she's got dozens of them. And my wife grew up with dogs, so we got a dog.
Yeah.
Against, I don't really want a dog. You can look after it. And I just fell in love with Stavros. And I can definitely say the single hardest thing I've ever done is hold Stavros's paw as he went to sleep, being riddled with cancer. It was just... Oh, and you, like literally a few years before, Stavros had come into our lives, and I honestly could not care less about dogs. They're slightly annoying, and that was a...
They creep into your heart.
Yeah,
shame. I'm so sorry. So is Paris the same breed as Stavros?
Paris
was?
Thinks he's a bull mastiff. Paris is actually a pug. So if you think of those Russian dolls, we've gone down to the very bottom.
Pug suits you.
He's really cool. He identifies as a parrot in that I'll be sitting on the couch doing some work and watching old episodes of Top Billing, which is what I spend most days doing. And he'll climb up and he'll sit on my shoulder for like 3 hours at a time.
Just sitting there.
Loves the human contact, and they do. And it's exactly the kind of dog I used to mock people about. Poor small dog, I'm going to drop kick it like a rugby ball. And now this little thing is so full of personality and energy and thinks he's 300 kilograms big.
Yeah.
Very similar to my wife. Very small, but still quite terrifying and thinks much bigger and stronger and scarier than they actually are.
No, they creep into your heart. Like the two French bulldogs, I came from a household where dogs weren't even allowed in the house. They had their kennels, they had their yard, they weren't even allowed in the house. Now these dogs basically run the show. And they sleep in our bedroom in their own little beds, but they try and get onto the bed at night. And what happens is I now have to sleep with earplugs because between my husband and the two French bulldogs, they snore, but not in unison. Like, so it doesn't, it's not like gray noise. It's like, and so, it's loud.
No, my wife will kill me for telling you this, so just keep it between the two of us.
Yeah. No one's going
to
know.
But we get the same. We used to have it with Stavros, now we have it with Paris. And if you remember, I know you're a bit of a film buff, if you remember the opening scenes of Saving Private Ryan. That's kind of our bedroom.
On the beach.
And I've just given up. Paris now sleeps between us. There is zero chance of any more nickel children. Paris is the greatest contraceptive known to man. He wedges himself in between and he gets quite annoyed. So if I lean over and just give my wife a peck on the head, say goodnight, darling.
So protective.
Very
that's
protective.
So cute.
But they are really
delicious.
Cool.
No, they're the best.
Now, you are a mum to your dogs, but you're also a stepmum, which it's a new space. How is that?
I love it.
Yeah.
Look, my stepdaughters are so amazing that if I had to put in a request with God how I wanted my own children to be, they would be these two girls. They are just amazing. Thankfully, they were very well raised by their mother as well. So I've got fantastic little ladies that are part of my family now. And it's great. It's very rewarding. I mean, teenage girls you'd think would be quite tough, but they're so lovely. And we all like the same things. Makeup, shopping, shoes. So
they're dad.
They're dad. Yeah, we've got a lot in common.
And so we find then, as I look across at my gorgeous friend, I don't think I've ever seen you look better. And it's just because it's shining from inside. And it's just such a nice space to be in.
Yeah, I'm tremendous. I'm a happy person innately. Like, I've always been quite a bubble. But I think I've gotten to the part of my life where I was always meant to be. Mm. So, yeah, I feel full. I feel complete.
Oh, well, it is wonderful to see. We're going to have to, when we wrap this up, take about 700 photographs because my brother-in-law, who you've met very briefly when we did our cycle last year, Dr. Fotis Kouvelakis, foremost dermatologist in South Africa, I've never seen anybody raise an eyebrow from Fotis, and I've taken him to all manner of events.
Yeah.
And then I introduced him to you, and he couldn't speak because you have been his crush for as long as he can remember.
Oh, that's so cute. Hi, Fotis. And I need a dermatologist. Do you know how hard it is to find a dermatologist? I try to find one. My appointment is next year, July. That's how busy they are.
You tell me when you're in Johannesburg and Dr. Fotis Kouvelakis won't charge you a cent. He probably won't say anything either. He'll just stand there gazing at you. You'll get no work done whatsoever. But you will have the appointment. We'll sort that out.
Oh, that's great. And I'm so glad you got to do that race with someone. So you cycled from London to Paris.
I cycled from London to Paris. Now, you've known me longer than most. I don't think you can recall too many events that have involved me doing a marathon or a triathlon or similar. We've normally been microphones and wine. That's kind of our shared space of
and
exertion.
And how was it?
It was horrible. It was Ron Rutland, who's going to be on the show coming up soon.
Yeah.
It was the end of his final midlife crisis bicycling journey. He'd ridden around the world again.
Yeah.
And he'd gone from London to Paris. I hadn't ridden a bicycle for 4 years. The previous time was his last World Cup trip, where I'd ridden uphill for 4 days in Laos in Southeast Asia, which was equally unpleasant. And got on the bike, and there were seven groups. One of the groups had your brother in.
I know. That's why I thought you were doing it on e-bikes.
No, so your brother was sensible. I was not. So he raced off, and he had a combination of an e-bike and also he's an athletic sort.
Yeah.
Whereas I was in the bottom group, which was for people who don't really know which way the bicycle goes. And I spent 9 hours on that first day, crying for most of it, riding uphill relentlessly. And I just remember there was a guy who was running our peloton, and he was riding behind and giving me a hand on the back up the occasional hill. And for about the last 3 hours, with every hill, I said, Dan, have you had enough now? Should we call it a day? Because I was the last person. Everyone else was about 10 kilometers up down the road.
Yeah.
But we finished it. Did it in 3 days.
Well, I'm so proud of you.
Well, I think it's also something I suspect you and I have in common, which for all the love to laugh and have a good life, etc., we're quite stubborn. And when we want to, when we decide we're going to do something, it's quite hard to dissuade us.
No, and it's so good taking on those personal challenges and adventures. I did the Argus once, and I did it the day after the Veuve Clicquot Polo, I had so much champagne in me, and I thought, maybe I should just do the doping and then do the cycling as well.
Listen, children, Auntie D.
No, not real doping, like jungle oats and stuff. And Liesl van der Westhuizen gave me some advice. She said, just make sure you get those shorts that have got the thick padding in so that you, you know, don't get sore on the
like the ones
on
you're wearing
seat.
Today.
And then she said, you've got to get this cream, like chamois cream, I can't remember what it is, so that you don't chafe. And so I thought, well, I'm not taking any chances. I refuse to chafe. So I put all this cream on. Then I get to the start of the Argus. I sit on my bike and all this white cream squeezes and oozes through my shorts because I put so much on. But you know what? I didn't chafe.
That is a...
Also, I did the Argus in 4 hours. Also, I was on a tandem. And I was on the back of the bike taking selfies, and the poor Iron Man in front of me just was like sweating, trying to not swear at me. I'm sick of Bossy.
As he's getting splattered by residual chamois cream and half-warm glasses of champagne.
I know, but no chafe. Thanks, Liesl. That was really good advice.
Oh, dear. All right. Well, with that beautiful image, I'll leave you with a challenge. My challenge challenge, of course, is to write some sparkling copy for your newsletter, yes, which I'm very excited about doing. I've got an event I'm doing in December. It's a charity event. Mm-hmm. I think you'd love it. Yeah. It's one I've done in Dubai. It's one I've done in the Drakensberg. And we were supposed to do it in New Zealand earlier this year, but it got moved to South Africa because we needed somewhere with a World Cup trophy. So we are spending 4 days, first week of December, with people from all over the world. It's the Laureus Challenge.
Ooh.
100 kilometres over 4 days, trekking through the winelands. Yeah. So it's 25 kilometres a day.
Vino Camino.
Exactly. What a that's right. We're changing the name of it instantly. And every evening I'll be hosting the wine tasting. And we've got some very cool people coming in from all over the world. It's for a very good cause. Yeah. And it finishes off, we go to the Sevens for the weekend.
How much do I have to walk a day?
25 kilometres. I think you'd nail it.
25 kilometres. Have you done the Pondo Trail before?
I haven't, but I have done the Laureus Challenge in the Drakensberg, and I survived it.
Is 25 kilometres a day doable? I can't imagine.
I think it's like, very doable.
And is it hilly?
No, it'll be completely flat, he says, having no idea of the route whatsoever.
Okay, I'm in.
All right.
I'll drive it? Okay, no, but that sounds great. I'm always up for a good good challenge, and my husband will definitely agree to go to the Sevens. Look, I'll meet him there.
It's all just an extended ruse to hang out with you more, because it's one of my favourite things to do.
Oh, you are amazing.
So, thank you. I'm genuinely delighted with where you find yourself today.
Thank you. Not just
on my podcast, but more largely. And we're going to have to do this again soon, because I think there's still a whole pile of Dan and Jeannie stories to wander through. Love to Paris and the rest of the
you
dogs.
You too. Love to the family. So good to see you.
Jeannie D, everybody.
You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.